You're listening to Better Than Fiction with your hosts, D.L. Nelson and Scott Sackett.
All right, welcome back to Better Than Fiction, your pop culture podcast. Oklahoma City's premier pop culture podcast, I might add. I don't think there's another one, to tell you the truth.
No.
And this will be episode 434.
Woo!
And as always, I'm your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
So, Scott, it's been at least a month since we've recorded, right?
Yes, it's been great. I've been going out to eat. We've been watching movies. We've been walking.
I know.
It's like, hey, Friday nights are free.
I know.
So this is our last episode. No.
Yeah, so just different things have come up that's kept us from recording, but we're back. I did post a classic episode last week. In the classic episode I posted, did you see what it was?
No, I did not. I was going to look and see.
Well, briefly, the reason why I posted it was because I talked about Tim Sale on that episode.
Oh, okay.
And so, as people probably know by now, Tim Sale has passed away, and he was only like 66?
Something like that.
Yeah, so he was not very old. I follow him
on... I didn't think he was very old. He didn't seem very old.
No, I follow him on Facebook. In fact, whenever I friended him or whatever, he accepted my, you know, he's the guy. He was not some handler dude doing it. So it was pretty cool because you could kind of not really interact with him, but if you put something up, you could kind of say something. He may say something back to you, that kind of thing, whatever. But and he put up his art and things like that. And so I was been kind of following him for a bit. Plus, I'm a huge fan. I've met him a few times. He drew a drawing of my sketchbook for me. He signed a bunch of books for me. And the funny thing about Tim Sale is he's actually about a year or so, maybe 2 years older than Jeff Loeb, who wrote a lot of the stuff that he worked on.
Yeah.
But Jeff Loeb seems like someone's dad, whereas Tim Sale, if you look at the guy...
Because he's bald.
Tim Sale's not bald. Oh, you mean Jeff Loeb?
No, Jeff Loeb. Yeah,
he's more or less bald. But he just kind of comes off as a little bit of an older guy, but he's actually younger than Tim Sale.
Because he's bald.
Tim Sale, though, comes off as like this L.A. surfer guy, even though he's from like Seattle or whatever. He kind of had that laid back kind of look about him and all. However, and I always thought that about him. I always thought he looked like a guy you'd see on the beach doing something like, you know, surfing or whatever. But his girlfriend...
Running a metal detector on the beach.
Yeah, or whatever. But his girlfriend or wife, I'm not sure who she was, one of the two, she posted a photo of him about 3 or 4 days before he died. And I think he was getting checked into the hospital or on the way to the hospital. And man, he looked not so good.
Well,
he looked,
I mean,
really sick. I don't know if he had cancer.
Illness will do that.
Yeah, I don't know what he had going on, but man, since we'd seen him last.
They haven't said what he died of either, have they?
No, and you know, we saw, you don't think you did, but I saw him at New York Comic Con 18. I went by his table, bought a couple sketchbooks from him. That's what I talked about on the last podcast.
Oh, actually. Okay, the one you posted.
Right, but yeah, I mean, you know, kind of talking to him briefly, bought a couple sketchbooks from him, that kind of thing. Still look. But you know, I know it's like almost 4 years later, 3.5 years later, whatever. But yeah, I don't know what was going on with him. They haven't said what he died from.
Yeah, I didn't. I never. And I'm not as big of a fan of his as you are. But I mean, he was at a lot of conventions that we went to.
Oh yeah, even Planet Comic Con.
He was at Planet Comic Con, and we were in the elevator with him at Planet Comic Con. And I didn't think he was that much older. I didn't think he was 10 years older than us.
No, he really didn't seem 10 years older than us at all.
And whereas Jeff Loeb,
yeah.
If you told me he's 10 years older than me, I'd go, really? As in, I'm surprised he's not 15 years older than us.
Yeah.
You know, going back to what you said, but, you know, it's been a tough year for comic book creators, or the comic book industry in terms of losing people.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't, you know, I mean, it's been a tough year. I don't know if any of the creators that died have passed from COVID, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't think he had COVID. I mean, he looked like he had... Well, I know before he died, about a day or so before he died, Jim Lee posted on his site, he said Tim Sale's been taken to the hospital for a very serious illness and said pray for him or whatever. And so I was like, man, you know, I heard he'd been hospitalized, but I didn't know it was like a very serious illness. And literally like 3 days later, he died.
Well, so... We've had Neil Adams pass away, and we've had
George Perez.
George Perez. I was going to say George Burns. George Perez.
He died a while back.
Yeah. George Perez passed away. Now, Neil Adams, I believe he had sepsis.
Right, yeah.
Which he had had before, apparently a year and a half ago. And he got it back, and he died pretty quick.
Well, he never made it out of the hospital.
Right.
You know, and he when he got it, and besides, not only did he get sepsis, but with his advanced age, he's in his 80s.
Right.
So.
But you know what, though? He was an air guy, seemed really healthy.
Right.
And
I think George Perez is only like 67, only maybe like a year older than Tim Still, but you know, he had pancreatic cancer. He had a lot of other health history problems. I think he had diabetes. He was partially blind. He
had had some health struggles. Well, right. In fact, you know what was funny about Perez, in a Facebook group dedicated to John Byrne, somebody posted, "Oh, he hurt his back." Talking about John Byrne, he hurt his back and he drew laying on in a couch on a drawing board. That's not John Byrne. That was George Perez, and he hurt his back like years ago. And it was enough to where he had to. And I don't know how they did that or how long he did that, but one of the books I have, he talked about how he would draw his comics laying flat on his back and with a board like above him.
That's
like
unbelievable.
Like a big clipboard or whatever. I know, it's shocking that he could do that. I mean, I've drawn on drawing boards before, but...
Your arms would get so tired. Yeah,
to do a comic book like that, but apparently couldn't sit at a desk. But anyway, George Perez struggled or had some health issues. He kind of... You kind of saw him coming. Neil Adams was kind of a shock, but in retrospect, you know, he'd had sepsis before. I think the Tim Cell thing probably shocked everybody.
If you follow any of those groups, you know, those art groups, it's unbelievable how people are shocked is putting it mildly, really.
What's weird is, you know, he was one of those, Perez did a ton of stuff. I mean, Perez was like a workhorse. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm going to talk about Perez a little bit tonight. But Perez did a lot of work. Neil Adams did a lot less work, but he was always around the industry. And Tim Cell, did Tim Cell work on a regular book, or did he do a lot of? It seemed like he did a lot of miniseries.
He did. Yeah, he did the miniseries for sure. Only about a couple months ago, there was a variant cover I picked up of like Superman Batman or Batman Superman. They just re-released it, like number 2 came out, and the variant was a Tim Cell variant, so I picked it up, because I always try to pick up his variants if I see them. So, I mean, he was still doing variants here and there, and then, earlier this year, I think it was, you know, Jeff Loeb got pushed out of Marvel because Kevin Feige took over Marvel TV.
Right.
Which... You look at the Netflix versus the Marvel TV, and the Netflix might be as good or better. But anyway, but after about 10 years, you know, or whatever, Jeff Loeb's pushed out of Marvel TV, pushed out of Marvel, kind of. And so he kind of went back to DC, not really went back as far as working a lot, but him and Sale did a long Halloween special.
Oh, okay.
That came out earlier this year, I think, or maybe into last year, not very long ago. And it was like an oversized one-shot, basically. And I was thinking, well, maybe we'll get some more of this Batman or Catwoman, or maybe a Marvel color book where they do the, you know, the color.
Yeah, the red or green or what, blue,
exactly.
Or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe, you know, they've done the Challenge of the Unknown, or they've done, you know, they've done other things here and there.
Right.
So I was just kind of hopeful that we would get some more. It freed Loeb up. And Tim still likes to work with Loeb. So to me, in my mind, I'm like, okay, the team's getting back together.
Yeah.
And then it just never really happened. So I'm pretty sad about it.
Yeah.
In fact, I would say this death of the three is a lot, for me, a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong. Perez is kind of my guy in the 70s, 80s. But lately, it's been Tim Cell, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I hate to... Yeah.
Rank them.
Well, I mean, none of the three, I would say, are like my... But George Perez is certainly a guy that, of the three, George Perez is probably my favorite artist of the three, for sure. But they're all influential, and they're all certainly, you know, icons in the industry, and it is unfortunate that he passed.
Yeah, and also don't forget on Tim Sale, he did all that artwork for that Heroes TV show.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
So
yeah,
he spent some time on that.
You know, and it's funny because, you know, Heroes was one of those shows that had such a huge splash when it came out.
Well, yeah, I mean, that
first season is phenomenal.
First season's great. Second season not so good. Wasn't it the third season where they just kind of crapped the bed? Where it dealt with that circus thing or whatnot?
I don't know.
That was terrible.
It got lost in somewhere in there. And one of the streaming services I have, maybe on Amazon Prime, and I thought I should watch that again. But I probably would stop after the first season.
Well, and then also when Hero went back to feudal Japan,
was season two, I think.
I didn't think that was very good. That could have been
really good. No, because
he was
one of the breakout characters, I thought.
Yeah, he was. That actor was, that character was.
Every time Michelle and I ran a Nissan Versa, I go, Nissan Versa, because that's what he somehow...
Was that his thing?
Well, because he went to America, and I don't know if he could see the future or someone told him, and like early on, he's talking about Nissan Versa, and he comes to America, and they rent a car, and it's a blue Nissan Versa.
Okay. All right, I don't remember that. Okay.
Yeah, so it's like, Nissan Versa.
Well, you know, you got the, what was his name? HRG, like horn rim glasses guy. You got You got Skyler? Was it Skyler?
Skyler was the killer.
Siler. He was the guy that would take his finger across your forehead and like cut your head apart or whatever. So you had some really good, and you had the cheerleader girl. You had some really good characters on there, but man, I thought the story after the first season, the writers just kind of shit it up, man, to me. Just really crapped on it.
Well, I think I don't think they were prepared to do more seasons. And,
maybe not.
And the first season was really good for whatever reason. I don't know anything about who worked on it and that sort of thing. But, I mean, I think the success of the Marvel movies has kind of spoiled a lot of the... has kind of, like, salted the earth for a lot of stuff like this because some of that stuff... And even going back to like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it first came out, some of that stuff was really good, and or even some of like the early Marvel movies that now everyone kind of, you know, gives them the thumbs down, but it's like, man, for the time that stuff was great, but we kind of got into this, well, if it doesn't make $1 billion, it's not a, you know.
That's irrelevant.
It is irrelevant. It totally is irrelevant.
I mean, is part of that $1 billion going to go in your pocket?
No. In fact, it's probably going to come out of your pocket.
So.
But, I mean, the fans, I'm always getting into arguments with people online because that's what you do nowadays, but also because people go, oh, man, Marvel needs to be making, like, the X-Men movies and the Fantastic Four. And I'm like, I like the X-Men movies. I mean, for all their flaws, they certainly have flaws. They're different than the Marvel movies. The Marvel movies have just kind of this, I don't know. They've kind of a formula they go by. And I know they've gone against that formula and they've done different stuff. And they're not all that, you know, this is this kind of movie or whatever. But they're not as oddball as some of the off-brand stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and just kind of, you get this weird, I mean, like look at, like, the New Mutants. Did you watch the New Mutants movie?
Yeah.
You know, it's just this weird little story that, and I don't think you'd ever get anything like that from Marvel because they'd want to Marvel it up.
Well, and you got to save the world or save something.
Yeah, that is one thing. They've elevated the stakes of the Marvel movies. And
kind of like James Bond, really.
Kind of like James Bond. I hate to use the term jump the shark, but for me, they've kind of jumped the shark on some of this stuff because, you know, James Bond, as good as Daniel Craig was, and as complete as that story was, and I thought they did a good job of telling the whole thing, I have no desire to see the next, whatever they're going to do with James Bond next, they're going to have to win me over. And people are talking about, oh, they got to do this, they got to do that. I don't go into it with any, because I don't care. I will not see it unless I see the trailer and I'm like, this is really cool, you know. It's kind of like Star Wars at this point, you know?
Oh, wait, you're not crapping on Star Wars, are you?
If they put on their Star Wars movie.
Did you see Obi-Wan?
We've watched a couple episodes of Obi-Wan. We're working our way through Obi-Wan.
Oh, my goodness.
But have you watched Ms. Marvel?
No.
Are you going to watch it?
You know...
Well, let me give you my...
Have you watched it all? Is it all
out? No, it's not all out. We've watched... Two episodes.
There's three out, right? Three.
Yeah, we're behind.
Is there going to be six or five or what?
I have no idea. Probably six.
You know, I don't really care for that character.
No, I don't care for the character, and I don't...
I mean, Ms. Marvel's Carol Danvers for me.
Well, I mean, that stuff can change. I'm with you. I mean, yeah, I'm with you on that, but I don't have a problem with the new character, with the new name. I don't have a problem with, you know, them saying she's Indian and she's a Muslim. I'm that doesn't matter to me. My big thing is, I think it's kind of boring. She doesn't do anything.
So it's like the comic.
Well, I haven't read enough of the comic to tell you, but you know, I went.
Well, she can kind of stretch her arm out, right?
In the TV series, she kind of like makes energy. She can grab stuff with it, and she can do like.
I thought she stretched.
She doesn't in the movie or in the TV show. My problem with this is my problem with when I went to the comic shop a couple years ago, and I told my retailer, I go, you know, I'm not really reading X-Men because I don't know what they were doing at the time, and I was like. You know, I want to. What's hot at Marvel right now? What's like the big? What should I be reading?
Did he tell you Squirrel Girl?
He told me Squirrel Girl. And I read the. He said buy this. If you don't like it, you can bring it back.
Dude, I wouldn't even got out the door with it.
I read it, and the whole thing was she like went to college or camp or something, and she got squirrels to help her unpack or. But it was just it's so boring.
Tippy toe out there.
And I get it. There may be a segment of the comic industry or the comic market that wants to read about, but you know, hey, this is a girl and she's going to school and she's struggling. And don't get me wrong, I know Spider-Man, Peter Parker had his issues, but there was action in it.
You know, if the segment of the comic buying market wants to buy a book like that, let me introduce them to Archie.
Well, I don't have a problem with Marvel doing books like that, but it's not what I want to read.
Right.
You know, and I'm not going to read. And I took the book. But unfortunately, I was at the comic shop Wednesday, and I flipped through the new Fantastic Four book. Did you buy that?
With the Hulk?
Yeah, maybe.
It's the one. It's the Hulk. And
it's the Ghost Hulk, Rider. Ghost Rider, and
I haven't read it yet, but I bought it.
I flipped through it and I was like,
I think it's got.
There's a lot of standing around in this comic.
I think it's got a. It's an Arthur Adams cover, right?
You know. Meanwhile, I'm reading, and I'm going to talk about it later. But I'm reading like older comics, and every page there's some kind of action. You know, there's something going on, and it's just. And anyway,
you got to have some story to move the story forward, though.
Oh, absolutely. But there needs to be something to engage, and it wasn't engaging me, you know. But
well, I've seen the previews of the Ms. Marvel. I'm not a Kamala Khan fan, so I think her name's Kamala Khan. Anyway, I told my wife, I go, you know there's a new Disney show? And she's like, what is it? And I told her, and I mean, we both just kind of shrugged our shoulders like, eh, maybe. On the other hand, we're watching Obi-Wan, and that's all kind of kick-ass.
Yeah, Obi-Wan's pretty good.
That little girl they cast as Princess Leia, that little actress.
Oh, yeah.
She's awesome.
She's pretty good.
So, you need to finish watching it. And I'll tell you what you might not...
Hang on, don't tell me anything, because we're not very...
This isn't a spoiler.
We're not very far
through. This isn't a spoiler. The holdup for you, though, on it, and other people like my wife might be, I think the show would be better if you'd watched The Clone Wars. And I say
we've worked our way through part of the word,
and I say that because in the Clone Wars, which I think happens between movies 2 and 3, because in 3, you know,
oh yeah, the,
Anakin
the,
kills
yeah,
the
yeah.
kills the younglings in three, and he gets his legs chopped off.
Yeah, you're right. It is 2 and 3.
And 1 and 2 would be, you know, it's Hayden Christensen, so it's probably between 2 and 3. But the thing about it is, you see the relationship of Obi-Wan and Anakin Skywalker as equals. You see Anakin being this brash guy that wants to get shit done. You can tell he's kind of the chosen one because his powers really are stronger than Obi-Wan's for the most part. And he's got a Padawan, and you see all that, and you don't get all that in the movies. You just get that he becomes a killer and he's a jackass and whatever. But so if you watch the Clone Wars, I think the Obi-Wan, there's better payoff, is what I'm saying, with all that backstory.
Yeah. We've watched quite a bit of the Clone Wars. I don't how many seasons were it, like 5 or 6.
They came back and did a new one. There's a new one up.
Oh god, is that the Bad Batch or whatever?
No. It's the last season.
Okay,
right. It's probably season 6 or 7. I think there's 5. There's probably, and it's not even a full season. I don't think
we've watched quite a few of them. I think we liked them. I liked them. We just kind of, there's so many of them that it just, you know
that one guy, Cade Bane, the assassin guy, you know, he's in Boba Fett, and then Ahsoka Tano.
Yeah.
You know, she's played by Rosario Dawson in it also as a live action.
Yeah.
So you get stuff like that, but you know, seeing their relationship in the cartoon, I think that makes the Obi-Wan show, to me, better. It's already good.
That makes sense.
I think it just makes it better. But anyway.
That makes sense. No. We really like the Clone. I thought the Clone was very well done.
Oh yeah.
So we're kind of talking about Marvel and Tim Sale and that sort of thing. Do you want to talk about Joe Quesada leaving Marvel? I guess is what he. I don't think he got booted. I think he left Marvel.
Well, yeah, I saw a little blurb. He said that he's.
He's going to do something.
I doubt he got booted.
Oh, I doubt he got booted, too.
Because he's like... I mean, they got rid of DiDio, but I kind of feel like...
Well, that was DC.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that, you know, he was like, what was he, like chief creative something or another.
Yeah.
His name's on all the movies. He's helping out, doing all this other stuff. I kind of doubt, and they're successful. If they were failing, then I could
see
it.
That's the thing, is he's... I think he had successfully migrated over the movies,
and
they got money.
Yeah, I doubt he got booted. I feel like he just won another challenge. I don't know for a fact, but it's going to feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I feel like he's going to go back into comics. And I feel like he's not going to be a starving artist because he probably made so much money in the past.
I think Quesada, for as much as we kind of ragged on him when he ran Marvel... I think he probably oversaw the last great era of Marvel. I don't know that I think they've gone downhill since he left.
Well, okay.
Editorial, since he left the comics.
So, at first I was not a fan of his.
Yeah.
But before he left, I really turned that around and really appreciated what he did. So much so that I met him in Chicago. And, you know, if I wouldn't have cared for him, I wouldn't have done it. But I met him in Chicago. He signed a book for me, blah, blah, blah. I really started thinking Quesada was really good.
Yeah.
And then Axel Alonso took over. And, I mean, that's when, to me, Marvel went down the shitter.
Yeah.
I think CB's kind of bringing it back, to tell you the truth. I don't think it's at the height of the Quesada, when Quesada had it, but I think it's better than when Axel Alonso had it.
Oh, I would agree with everything you just said. You know, we used to go. He did those Cup of Joe things.
Oh yeah.
And he would do the Cup of Joe column.
Yeah, I used to read that.
I used to read that.
I really liked that.
I think that's the kind of thing that Marvel needs.
A cup of CB.
A cup of CB. His
or maybe CB CB breaker breaker CB. There's some kind of CB radio.
CB
calling in.
CB lingo. I don't know.
Yeah.
CB
calls the shots.
Yeah. CB, your man in Japan. I don't know. Anyway, but I think that, I mean, Quesada did those panels like a scene at all the comics.
Oh, yeah.
The panels.
I went to several.
And they were always good, entertaining. And I don't know if I ever went to one of Axel Alonso's. I don't know if he ever had them. And CB does something like that, but I mean, you know.
Oh, the
I
Cup of Joe panel was packed.
Yeah.
I remember one time I stood in the back.
CBs are packed, but I don't think he's kind of got the. It's a different kind of thing now, you know.
Posada had a good personality.
He had a good personality. He was, and yeah. And I mean, we know CB. CB's a nice guy.
I'm not saying he doesn't have it, but I'm just saying that.
He doesn't come across like that when he talks.
Quesada is a little bit like DiDio, but.
Yes, a lot like DiDio, I think.
But, I don't. A lot of what. I mean, DiDio is very well spoken. DiDio is really a, you know, positive for DC at the time. Same with Quesada. I think the difference would be, though, I just like the Marvel stuff more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it came down to.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was interesting that he left. Somebody speculated he's going to do like a crowdfunding thing.
Yeah, possibly. I wonder if he'll take over, DiDio's going to take over Frank Miller's new imprint.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if, like, Quesada's going to do something, like take over something or another. I mean, why not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know.
Unless he just wants to draw.
The comic industry is so crazy now. Well, it's crazy, and I feel like it's so shrunken, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the.
But there's all these new companies. I mean, there's tons and tons of new companies.
Yeah, if you were him, of course, you know, like you say, I'm sure he's got a bankroll to fall back on.
Yeah, he doesn't have to really make money.
He didn't have to make money. So maybe, you know, maybe he wants a challenge. Maybe if you're him, you're like, hey, you know, let's go to Valiant or I don't know if he has like a non-compete clause or something where he can't do something, or maybe he's going to do. The speculation I've heard is that he's going to do like a Kickstarter. You know, some of these Kickstarters are making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
But see, he's probably making more than that at his
day
job he had. I kind of wonder if he's not.
Yeah, you're right about that.
I kind of wonder if he's not just going to get the team back together and get some of his Marvel Knights guys that maybe in. Do something with
maybe
somebody.
Maybe him and Pomelotti and
yeah, something
else.
Like that. Yeah, I mean, who knows?
He might. I mean, yeah.
I mean, to me, that would be cool if he got sort of the team back together and they went to like AWA Upshot or they went to wherever.
Yeah,
they wouldn't go there because that's where Axel Alonso is, I think. But
I never even heard of that. But
but you know, there's a lot of small companies that could possibly or maybe form their own. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to see them form their own, you know, or maybe do something where it's like, okay, you know, when Image first started, they were originally published by Malibu, so maybe, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. I hope he does something. I feel like the comic industry needs a kick in the butt. I don't know if he's the guy to kick it, but, you know, he's been successful in the past.
I mean, I'm reading a good chunk of books. I don't know what your issues are with this stuff, but to me, there's...
What Marvel books are you reading?
So there's a couple Punisher books out. I'm reading those. There's a Silver Surfer 5-issue limited series that just wrapped.
Okay.
There's a Maestro limited series I'm reading. This is the third arc of this limited series, so this is the final one. A couple issues of that left. Let's see what else. I was reading Black Widow. That just wrapped a couple months ago. I read the whole run and it's finally wrapped. So, you know, there's other things here and there, but...
You got that first issue of Fantastic Four.
Well, I picked that up. I don't know if I'll stick with that or not. Who knows? I did pick that up. I'm picking up, there's this Immortal X-Men. I picked up the first two issues of that. I haven't gotten issue three yet, but I picked up the first two issues of that. On DC, I'll read about anything Tom King writes. So he's writing a Human Target book right now. He's writing Batman Catwoman when that comes out. He finished Rorschach. He had a limited 12-issue series of that. I picked that up. He did an 8-issue series of Supergirl. I picked that up. So, I mean, anything that Tom King writes, he's kind of the hot DC writer right now. Yeah. I'll pick up his stuff. And then just, you know, and then I'll pick up stuff at Dark Horse stuff. I'll pick up Image stuff, just, you know, just here and there. If a Hellboy book comes out, or a BPRD book, or something Mignola's doing comes out, I'll pick that up.
I thought Mignola was retired.
No, not at all. He does.
Oh, is he? Okay, so he's back.
I don't think he ever retired.
Oh, I thought he retired and was going to do watercolor.
Well, he was going to. That was a thing, but I think that was just...
That was pre-COVID, though, wasn't
it? So brief.
Oh, it was?
That, yeah, I mean, he's... You know, he wrapped up BPRD, but then he started doing Hellboy in the BPRD, and there's stories that from the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
When Hellboy first joined
like a teenager or whatever.
Well, when he first joined the BPRD in the 50s or whatever. And he's done like Hellboy in the BPRD in 56, Hellboy in the BPRD in 57. So you can really just, you know, if you're reading that, you go, this is the 56 year, this is the 57 year. And then when he gets like 3 years worth, they collect into a hardcover.
Oh, gotcha.
So.
You know what's cool about that? I like that, and then see like Darrow is working on the Shaolin Cowboys.
Oh yeah,
and then even going back to like a little bit different twist, but like John Byrne doing his X-Men stuff online. I think it's cool that these guys, who had successful careers, are able to continue doing stuff that that they like. They're not like having to go out and shill for, oh, I got to deal with this editor at Marvel, and I'm drawing this Spider-Man. You know what I'm saying? They're able to do something they enjoy that they kind of have control over there, even though in Byrne's case it's a little bit different, but it's still he has control over it. They don't have to deal with the company necessarily that we're like an editor necessarily telling them what to do, but they're still able to get their work out and continue producing work. Whereas if they were working, I don't know, drawing Spider-Man or something, they'd probably get burned out and fired and who knows what else.
Well, then also, as soon as it's a crossover, you have to stop your story to fit the crossover into your story. That kind of sucks, too. That has so many writers I've read say that was like a killer. Like, they're going along on their story, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, you know, on issue 23 and 24 you got coming up in the next couple months, you got to fit your storyline into this big crossover.
Yep.
Like, what are you talking about? That's not part of my... That's the way it is now, you know?
Yep.
That's one of the things.
It's been that way for ten years at least.
Yeah, since what was the first House of M? Maybe I know there's been ones before that, but I think since House of M, they have one or two a year now.
What's funny is House of M. I mean, we look back at that, but it's like some of those crossovers in retrospect were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, I read House of M not too long ago, and it's like, this is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good.
You know, it's solid. I don't know about all the spinoffs and stuff, but
I mean, I didn't read all the spinoffs. I read some of them, though. Yeah. That was, you know, there have been some good events, but then there's been some that have been really bad, too.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is the really bad ones really are glaringly bad, and it kind of makes you forget about the few that have been pretty good.
And then so many books involved in the crossover. That's the thing.
Character, you might be reading along, and all of a sudden your character gets yanked into this pointless crossover, and you're like, but heck, that happened to, I want to say that happened to Captain America during Brubaker's run.
Oh, really?
I think there was an issue where he had to do something with, like, was it Secret Invasion or something? I forgot what it was.
Yeah, I don't know if I read Secret Invasion.
It was a Bendis one.
I think that was a decent one.
The worst one, I think, was that Fraction one, the Fear Itself.
Oh, yeah. That was bad.
Well, there's been some, like, Venom ones and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That I won't even read.
Right.
But I did read The Fear Itself, and, man, that was just pretty damn awful.
Yeah, it's like, hey, it's we like, all have armor at the end or something.
Well, all those damn Thor hammers fall out of the sky and all this nonsense. And it's like, you know, whoever the hot writer is during this, like, six-month block, they go, okay, you're the guy that's going to come up with the event. What do you got? And, you know, Fraction's probably like, what? I got to do an event? And then he's probably just sitting there thinking to himself during Marvel Summit, Fear Itself. He just throws that out there, and they're like, that's a great title. Come up with something. That's kind of the catchphrase, and then I don't know what that had to do with the real thing, because there's hammers, these people get these hammers that kind of become like pseudo-Thors.
Something, I forget what the deal
is. And I remember, I think I told you this, but I was at a panel at Planet Comic Con, and like the last issue that hadn't came out yet, or maybe the 6th or the 7th, I think it was like a 7-part series.
Yeah.
And Fraction was there, because he used to live in Kansas City, so he was there. And he's like, yeah, you guys, are you guys reading my event? And people are like, oh, yeah, I'm reading your event. You know, this is the panel. He's like,
yeah.
He's up there at the table. And I was just, I thought, am I the only one that thinks this event sucks? But I was like, yeah, yeah, we're reading your event.
The sad thing is.
And then he goes, well, I've got, I think he had like 6 or 10 copies. I got 6 or 10 copies of the new book. It's not even out yet. I'm going to pick 6 or 10 of you guys to come up here and read this during this panel so you can see what you think. Now, he picked out random.
I think I remember that.
He picked out random people, and my thought was, how does he even know these random people have even read the first 5?
Right, and I think they went up and read it, and he was like, "Don't tell anybody" or something
like
that.
Yeah, yeah, and he's like, "You guys like this?" And he's, then they're all, of course, they're all reading at different speeds.
Right.
And you know, there was some girl up there. I don't think she'd even read any of it. She's all smiling, like, "Oh, this is great." And and then you know, and then a couple weeks later, I buy it, and I'm like, "This thing sucked."
Yeah.
The whole thing was just
they didn't. I don't remember much about it. The art was good because it was Stuart Immonen.
Did he only draw it?
Yeah, he drew it.
He got suckered into drawing that crap.
Yeah. Well, he was kind of the go-to guy at the time, but they just didn't stick the landing, you know.
Oh, well, I thought the whole thing was terrible. The landing was part of it, true,
yeah.
But just the whole. And I stuck in there. I don't know why I even stuck in there. It was terrible. Probably one of the worst events.
I like the art. I thought the art was decent. But yeah.
Well, we're 37 minutes in. You want to actually have a talk about something?
Yeah, we can talk. I want to read something first.
So you read something. I got a book, and then we'll call it a minute.
Okay. Yeah. Let me talk about two things.
All right.
Real quick, but I want to read this. It's a poem. I don't know if we've ever read poetry on this.
Wow.
On this show, I think you'll I think you'll like
that's
it.
That's more of a unicorn than like a video game, I think, on this show.
Right, yeah, probably. But so lately I have been on kind of an old science fiction kick, and I've been reading science fiction stuff from the, we'll say, 60s, 70s, and early 80s. And when I was a kid, one of my favorite authors was Isaac Asimov. Did you ever read any Isaac? You didn't read a lot of science fiction when you were a kid, did you?
No.
Oh.
I was reading comic books, man.
I really liked Isaac Asimov. I saw he was on TV. I saw interviews with him.
He's the guy who lived in Sri Lanka, right?
No, that's Arthur C. Clarke. He lived in New York. I mean, this is Isaac Asimov, right?
Okay, yeah.
For those of you unfamiliar, balding, glasses, mutton chop.
Oh, mutton.
Kind of longish.
Hair, yeah.
Longish, kinky hair. I believe he's Jewish. He's kind of got that Jewish kinky hair.
Be careful.
Yeah, I'm not trying to stereotype, but he looked like, you know. Anyway, so.
Does he have the ringlets?
No, he didn't have ringlets. He was not Hasidic. But anyway.
Did you say acidic?
No, Hasidic. That's the guy with the ringlets.
Right.
Anyway, but when I was a kid, I don't know why, I thought this guy was just like the coolest guy in the world.
Jack Guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
This probably says more about me than him. Anyway, so I dug this book out.
The Bicycle Man?
Yeah, that says Bicycle. The Bicentennial Man.
Well, dude, your thumb was in the way.
Okay. I can see why you don't read books.
Across the room, and your thumb was kind of covered half of it.
Fair enough. Anyway, it's a book of his short stories. And what's cool about this, and I don't know if they even put books of short stories out, collections, but he would write these long introductions about the publishing industry and what was going on. I just thought it was really cool. And then one of the introductions for this has a poem that he wrote that I think you'll like. It's kind of a limerick. And it's a little long.
There once was a girl from
France who wore no underpants or whatever. It's called The Prime of Life. And I'm going to read it because I think you'll appreciate this. This is called The Prime of Life by Isaac Asimov. It was, in truth, an eager youth who halted me one day. He gazed in bliss at me, and this is what he had to say. Well, Mazel Tov, it's Asimov, a blessing on your head. For many a year I lived in fear that you were long since dead. Or if alive, 155 cold years had passed you by, and left you weak with poor physique, thin hair, and rheumy eye. For sure enough, I've read your stuff since I was but a lad, and couldn't spell or hardly tell the good yarns from the bad. My father, too, was reading you before he met my ma. For you he yearned once he had learned about you from his pa. Since time began, you wondrous man, my ancestors did love. That sci-fi dean and writing machine, the aged Asimov. I'd had my fill, I said, be still, I've kept my old-time spark. My step is light, my eye is bright, my hair is thick and dark. His smile in brief spelled disbelief, so this is what I did. I scowled, you know, and with one blow, I killed that rotten kid. Anyway, I thought you would appreciate that, and I wanted to read it on. We haven't done we've never done a poem reading.
Not that I remember.
Yeah, and anyway, but I when I was a kid, I read that poem, and I thought it was hilarious. So I thought I would share it with our audience.
It's pretty good.
The book that I do want to talk about, have I talked about Ringworld on here? I think I mentioned I'm reading it.
I don't know if you talked about Ringworld.
Okay, I finished reading Larry Niven's Ringworld, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great book. I had read it when I was a kid. I didn't remember much about it beyond the basic plot. I took it with me on vacation, and I still didn't finish it until we got home. It took me, it's 340 pages, and it probably took me a month to get through it in between other stuff. And I was trying to find another book to read, and somebody said, oh, you should read Dune. And I'm thinking, good grief, at this rate, that'd take me a year.
Yeah, and the fact that you're like, what is it, like 20 Dune books or something?
Yeah, I'm not reading Dune. I've read parts of Dune. You know, it's not my cup of tea. I've decided that. Anyway, but Ringworld is the story of about four people, a guy named Lewis Wu, who's 200 years old, and it starts off he's celebrating his birthday. And in this era, they have transporters where you can, like Star Trek, where you can transport from one place to another. So to celebrate his birthday, and by the way, at 200 years, because of technology, he's still fairly spry. He's old, but he's not as old as a 200-year-old man would be. He's probably the equivalent of like our age in the, you know, so... I think
we can live to 150.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know about 200. Anyway, so to celebrate his birthday, what he's doing is he is traveling and he's rich, by the way. He's traveling from time zone to time zone ahead of his birthday. So he's celebrating his birthday before midnight in every time zone.
Okay, yeah.
And at one point, when he teleports, he gets intercepted, and he ends up in a different place. He's still on Earth, but he meets this alien named Nessus. And Nessus is an alien called a puppeteer. I don't know if you've ever heard of puppeteers, but as an alien race, they're kind of famous from the Ring World, and they were in some other books of Niven's. But a puppeteer basically looks like an ostrich, but it's got two heads. So if you think about two heads, that's why they call it a puppeteer, because it looks like a guy doing puppets. Anyway, the puppeteer are an advanced race of aliens. They basically avoid people. Humans know about them, but they don't really have a lot of contact with them because they've shunned humans. They have advanced technology. So he tells him, I need you for this mission, and I'm going, and so he's like, you have to agree to go before I tell you where you're going to go. He kind of appeals to his sense of adventure, and so he agrees to go. What the deal is he meets up, there's two other people involved in this, so there's four altogether. There's a girl named Tila Brown, who's young. They didn't really say how young she is, but she's significantly younger than Lewis. And then there's another alien called, his name is Speaker to Animals, and he's this big orange-furred Think of like a Wookiee, but more with like pointed ears and orange fur. Okay? And they're ferocious. And then there was a war with the humans, and he's an alien named Kazin, K-Z-I-N. And Larry Niven eventually wrote a series of books called the Human Kazin War, and other people wrote stories about it. It became kind of this big spinoff thing. Anyway, so the group of four, and what the deal is he tells them, if you go with me, I will give you this ship that we have that travels faster than light. Humans don't have this ship. And so he's like, if he gets his ship, it'll be this huge advancement. And so he tells them that they're going to go find this ring world. And this ring world is an artificially constructed world, and it's a ring around the sun that's about the distance of Earth's orbit. So it's this huge thing. And this is the story of them going to the ring world and finding it and their adventures of what they find there. And I really enjoyed the book. I don't want to give too much of the plot away, what happens, but it's a great story. There are sequels, but this is pretty much a complete story.
I was going to say, didn't he write about six of those or something?
There were a few of them. There's this, I have this book and the sequel. But this is pretty, if you read this, it's complete. So anyway, so I read that. I enjoyed it. I would highly recommend it to anybody that wants to read kind of like an old school science fiction thing. And, you know, it's weird because it's science fiction, but computers barely play a part in it at all.
How does he compare to, like, I know he's like way more recent than Asimov, but Asimov's kind of, I would consider Asimov old science fiction. This guy's more newer, right? Even though this is still an old.
Yeah, they're more contemporaries than
that. This book is still like, what, 25, 30 years old?
Oh, like, this is from 71.
Oh, it's even older. Wow.
Yeah. I'm just guessing off the top of my head. Sorry, I got like a million texts.
So that Ringworld's 50 years old.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, but it like I said, so Asimov started like around like World War II or maybe right before. I don't think Niven started right until the 50s.
Yeah.
So he's probably, I believe Niven's still alive and Asimov's been dead for quite a while now.
Yeah.
But there's probably 20 years in the age difference between the two.
I thought it was way more than that.
No, I don't think it's way more than that. But Larry Niven, I mean, both of them are very well-respected authors. Well, I forgot what I was going to say about Niven, but I don't know much about him as a person or whatever. Like I said, but Asimov, I know a lot about Asimov because when I was a kid, he was, you know, I kind of looked up to him. But I enjoyed the book. I would, if you want, I mean, like I said, it's kind of an old-school science, not like, like Reagan. I mean, when it was written, he was considered like hard science fiction. What I mean by that is it's very science-based versus, hey, it's Buck Rogers off through the, you know, ionosphere with ray guns and stuff like that. It's not like that when I say old school. It's more, I would say more, the big thing that I noticed was that, like, some of the technology that we have now was completely absent, like, they have communicators, but they're not like cell phones. And I don't think there are any computers in the book at all. Maybe like a flight navigating computer, but in terms of like some of the stuff that we think of, there's nothing like that. And there are certainly instances where some of that stuff, that like technology that we have now, would have been useful for them in this book. Mm-hmm. But
like a cell phone.
Well, I was thinking like a GPS, you know?
In your cell phone.
Yeah, but I mean, it's cool because, I don't know, I enjoyed it. It was exactly what I was looking for. I've been wanting to read like older stuff kind of to, I don't know. Anyway, but I really enjoyed it, and I recommend it if you're looking for kind of a good, fun. It's not real long. It's 300 pages, so it's not short, certainly.
Right.
But it's a I called it a fun adventure book. You know, anyway, Ringworld by Larry Niven, and if you enjoy it, there's couple sequels.
What's the cover price on that? What can I pay on that? $1.50? 75 cents?
I paid $2.50 for it. I bought this off the stands in 1981.
So it's $2.50 cover price?
Yeah.
So we get that for $2.50?
You know what? You may be able to get a paper. I mean, I don't know what a paperback of it would set you
right,
back.
Right.
You may be able to buy this one for $2.50 somewhere if you can find it.
Right.
Well, you said, I mean, it's still in print.
You sent an old book. So on that tangent, I brought an old book. I brought an old book, not as old as that, though. But Barry talked about this book, and I quite liked it, so I decided to pick one up myself. And what I've got in my hands is Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck, The Son of the Sun by Don Rosa, Volume 1.
Okay.
You ever read any of this?
The only Uncle Scrooge, I've read that one Don Rosa book.
The Life and Times of?
Life and Times, yeah.
Right. So, there are 10 of these Don Rosa books that sort of tie into the Karl Barks books.
Right.
Sort of. So Karl Barks did the Donald Duck books in the 50s, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know how far, 60s or 70s, I think, something like that. And Fantagraphics has been reprinting those in nice hardcovers. I want to say, maybe...
How many volumes are there?
Maybe there's 20 out now. They might need to go another 10 or 20 more. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
a lot of material, for sure.
A lot of material. But, so, what makes these Don Rosa books special? And I think Barry talked about this, but I'm going to talk about it a little bit. So, if you read... I read the whole book, and the important thing about reading the whole book is the book has... It's got a preface by Don Rosa. Then it has the section called The Stories. Then after that, it's got a section called Behind the Scenes. Another section called This Should Cover It All. And then another section called The Life and Times of Don Rosa. And so he writes it all. And when you read it, like the preface talks about a little about how when he grew up, Don Rosa grew up in Kentucky, and he grew up rich.
Oh,
his parents were loaded.
Okay.
Do you know this?
No, I don't know anything about him.
Yes.
I mean, I've met him in Kansas City, haven't I?
Right. Oh, yeah, we've met him.
Yeah, I was thinking he signed my book.
He signed my book, too. But, so Don Rosa's grandfather immigrated to America from, I think, I don't remember exactly, I think it's Italy. I could be wrong about that. But their name wasn't quite Rosa. It was something similar to Rosa, I think, but they maybe changed it.
Yeah.
Like his dad, his name's not Don, actually. His name's something else that goes by Don. And anyways, it's probably in here somewhere. I don't know if I can find it or not, but it's like Giacoli or something like
okay.
I think. Something like that. And his grandfather's name was Keno, like the game, like you play
really?
Las Vegas. His grandfather's name was Keno, and his grandfather comes over, and he starts a construction company in somewhere in Kentucky, and this company took off like gangbusters and made a lot of money. So Keno Rose, the grandfather, goes back, brings his whole family over here, including Don's father, and like, I think two sisters, a sister, the father, and another brother, and then the wife, I think is the way it is. Anyways, they all come to America, and it's a given that Don Rosa's father and his uncle are going to take over the family construction company. And they do, from the dad, when they get old enough. And so now his dad and his uncle are running this construction company or whatnot. Well, the uncle never got married. He's like a confirmed bachelor. And Don Rosa's dad only had, Don Rosa was the only son, I guess. And so it was kind of a given he was going to take over the construction company in Kentucky.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. He didn't care a crap about construction at all. He likes Karl Barks comics. Now get this.
Nice.
Get this. His dad.
Can I make a comment?
Right.
So at my work, I work for a company that, I'm not going to say the name, but it's very successful. We do about $80, $90 million worth of business a year. The founder and owner still alive, still comes in every day, still stomping around doing his thing. But he has a son. And I've always said, if you were his son, the worst thing in the world would be to be the son of somebody that had a successful business that wanted you to take it and you didn't want to take it.
Yeah.
And that sounds like, and I'm not saying that's the case here necessarily.
Right.
But the son isn't in every day, let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He didn't have to because the dad is.
Right.
And the son's got a gold ticket if he wants it or not.
Right.
That's kind of Don Rosa. Don Rosa, his dad pays for his college. Well, first of all, they've got a lot of money.
Yeah.
The dad buys, like, this big plot of land, like 5 acres, builds this big house on it. But behind, the 5 acres is kind of like their yard.
Yeah.
Behind it, there's another like 12 or 15 acres that's their property.
Oh, gotcha.
That he can kind of run around, like woods, that Don Rosa, as a little kid, can run around in. It's his yard, basically. And so this house, I mean, he describes it, it's like an MFing mansion.
Yeah.
It's got like he basically has his own damn wing. He's growing up like Bruce Wayne or some shit, right? And he's the only boy, and he can do whatever the hell he wants to do.
Is he the only kid?
He's got an older sister, and this is where this comes in. His older sister's about 10 years older, who love comics. So the mom and the dad were always buying her comics.
Okay.
Mainly
Karl Barks,
Donald Duck comics. And she had a shit ton of them. And so he grew up reading her comics and just loved these Donald Duck comics so much. And in his mind, he's like, there's the good artist. But Disney didn't let Karl Barks sign his name.
Right, yeah.
So he just kept referring to this one artist as the good artist.
Yeah.
And so, meanwhile, when he gets older, and he does all kind of shit on this property, right? But his dad's like, hey, you know, I want to pay for you to go to college, but I want you to take over the company, so I want you to get an engineering degree.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't care a crap about engineering. But as a good son, he goes to college, and it takes him like 4.5 years, but he gets this civil engineering degree of some sort.
Yeah.
And he said it's like one of the hardest degrees they offered at the college he went to.
Oh, yeah.
He's got this degree, some kind of engineering. I think it's civil engineering. And the dad's like very happy he's got it. He can take over the company. Well, fast forward a little bit, the confirmed bachelor uncle that never ever got married, he ends up marrying a gal when he's in his 50s, and this gal's got a son who he adopts him, whatever, it's his stepson. And so now there's like a rival for the company. Yeah, whereas he thought all of his life he's the shoe-in for the company, now he's got this stepson who just kind of appeared out of nowhere that can maybe get the company too, right? And so, sure enough, the uncle and the dad retire. The stepson guy and Don Rosa take over the company. Now, what I'll say is when he was younger, he traced and copied Karl Barks' Duck comics.
Oh, yeah.
And he wrote his own. And then he wrote his own, like, superhero comics that he would draw kind of like stick figures.
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't really care about what they look like, because he's just doing them for himself. And so he made all these comics that he only showed himself. He didn't show them to anybody. But what happened was he found out there was this other guy that really liked the Duck comics that he met, like, at a con or at a store or something, or a comic shop or something. Come to find out, this guy either did a fanzine or knew of a fanzine for the Ducks, and so, or for just comics in general, I guess, but got Don Rosa involved, and Don Rosa started writing articles or whatever about comics.
Oh, okay.
Maybe like Duck stuff, but other things too, I believe. And then he also did illustrations for like high school paper and college, and he's doing illustrations and that kind of stuff. Well, eventually, so he's been doing all these illustrations and stuff for a long time, like since he's a kid, all the way up to like college and whatever. And, you know, he got progressively better and that kind of thing. But now, he's out of college, he ends up getting married, gets a wife. I think he's still married to her, as a matter of fact. And they decide, well, you know, he's starting a family or whatever, he's just going to have to give up drawing completely and focus on his construction, running this, like, big construction company, right? that's been around for like maybe 50 years at this point or something like that.
Okay.
So gives up that, but what happens is somehow this guy that he knows started, I think he started Gladstone, and it was like, it was like, the reason why he called it Gladstone's because Gladstone's like one of the characters in the Duck books or whatnot, and he starts doing these reprints of these Duck comics, and then Rosa finds out that, and they never quit making Duck comics, they're just making them like in like Sweden and like France whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're not really making them in America until they started reprinting these Gladstone ones or whatever. And then through this fanzine, he finds out that like the good artist is Carl Barks. And so he got rid of some of his old Duck comics and started reading superheroes, but he always kept like the Barks ones, and he reread them and stuff like that. Well, then when the opportunity came, when this friend of his started Gladstone, this guy he knows started Gladstone, they asked him if he wanted to do something for him. And so he contributed a piece, and they liked it, so they published it or whatever. And that kind of got him going, and then to start doing stories. And then he would do these long stories that he'd like work all day at the construction thing, and he would come home at night and do these like long, maybe 30-page stories that tied into something that Barks did like in the 50s or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it might have been something that happened before that story or after that story or maybe inside that story, like something they talked about or whatever. Kind of like how Barry was explaining on the podcast.
Right, before. Yeah.
But anyway, that got to be such a big deal, and he got so popular that they offered him more and more work. And then they said, hey, you know, you're running kind of slow because you're working full-time at your other job. Would you want to write something that someone else could draw? So he did a few of those kind of things. Then they said, hey, we're going to republish some of these Barks stories. Could you illustrate some new covers? Because when these Barks stories originally came out, they came out in a different book. They didn't have their own cover. So
right.
Could you do a cover specific to the story? So you actually got to do stuff covers for reprints of Barks stories. At one point, Carl Barks was still alive. So like Barks roughed in a story and Rosa finished it. So he got to like work with his idol or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And so, anyways, if you read this book, if you read this book, it talks about how he got started, how much he loved the Duck stories, what it meant to him. It was such a big deal that he got to be so popular at it with this company, and selling units and all that, that the stepson said, hey, you know, you're really putting more time into that now than you are the company. Would you want to just dissolve the company and we'll just go our separate ways? And so he didn't want to come up with that idea on his own, but when the other guy did, he's like, sure. So this sounds unbelievable. They just sold the company and sold off all the equipment and everything and just dissolved the company that had been around forever. This very successful company, just so he could do comics. These stories. And I don't know what
happened. Think about how many people lost their jobs.
I know. And also, I don't know what happened to the big house. This house sounded like bigger than like Elvis's mansion. This house sounded unbelievable. I don't know where this thing went. But anyways, so the preface talks about that. And then the thing where it talks about the covers, it explains like when he did covers for other old stories. It has examples. And then the back, it has the life and times of Don Rosa. And it actually shows, like, photos of him when he was, you know, growing up, photos of him, like, he bought, get this, at this point here in 1970, he bought 5,000 old comic books for 2 cents each.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you do the math on that, what is that like, I don't know, a couple $100? I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's cheap.
It's not much. But here's a photo of him in the 70s going through these stacks of these old comics he bought. But his parents just had just a crap ton of money and just kind of let him do, like, here's some old drawings he did.
Oh, yeah.
Simples of those. And like, this is when he was, like, really young, though, right? Like a little kid. And then here he's some superhero. He took a photo of himself being some superhero he was drawing or whatnot. But the book is unbelievably good.
Oh,
and the stories are really good, too, but just the back matter is almost as good as the stories.
Yeah, I want to read a biography about him.
Yeah, it is. Well, his biography, if you buy these books, I think it's going to all be in there. Here's the covers he did, and they're in here. And then if you look, it talks about who colored this. Some of this has been recolored.
Oh, yeah.
The coloring on this book is phenomenal. The coloring is really nice, and his artwork is super sharp. I mean, this book is a home run, man. It is unbelievable. I give it the highest.
Do you have all of them, or just have that one?
I've got about four of them.
What did you say? There are 10 altogether.
There's 10 altogether. I've got the first four.
Gotcha.
I've read one, and I'm working on two right now.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
This is cool. When did this come out? This is not available anymore, hardly, is it?
Well, you can still get it used, I think. I don't think you can buy a new one anymore or not. I think it came out like in 17 or something. I don't know. It's been out a while. It's been out a few years.
Oh, yeah. This is the kind of thing. It's probably hard to find.
No, not really. You can find it on eBay.
All 10 of them are out?
All 10 of them are out. And, you know, they come out singly, and then when the second, like one comes out, then two, and then when two comes out, they put out like a two-volume slipcase. Like, Barry has all the slipcases.
Oh, yeah.
You can't get the slipcases for some of them, but you can get a lot of them singly still. You can get them all singly, and you get some of them in the slipcases.
Oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, highly recommend that book. It is. I'm reading two right now, and the back matter and the stuff he talks about in it is just really sharp, really cool. So anyways, to check it out, Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck, Son of a Son, Don Rosa Library, Volume 1. Really neat. You want to wrap this episode up here?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap this up here. As always, I'm your host, D.L. Nelson, joined by my other host,
Scott Sackett.
Come back next week for another all-new episode.
Let me say something before we go.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just wanted to say, because this episode will come out fairly shortly, my comic book is in the July previews. It's under Source Point Press. I don't know the diamond code off the top of my head, but it's Heaven's Rejects. So if you're a fan of the show and you want to support my comic book, have your local comic shop order Heaven's Rejects.
Order three for this.
Well, there's two one covers. There's two covers.
Six. One to read, one to put in a board and never touch, bag and board it, and one to give to a friend.
There you go. That'll work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so check that out if you enjoy the show and you want to support my comic endeavors. I'd really, really appreciate it.
You got to keep those diamond numbers up, man.
Exactly.
And then you get the sales up, then you get to do a trade. Then they want you to come back to do season two.
Season two, yeah, man. Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
Heaven's Rejects season two, man. Let's do it. All right, with that, as I said, I'm D.L. Nelson. You're Scott Sackett. Come back next week. Check out our blog at BetterThanFiction, the podcast.blogspot.com. And I will put some photos up of what we talked about tonight.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a second to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. This will allow other people to find the podcast.
That's right. With that, we'll say, hey, see you next week, true believers.